Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Saturday evening for February 19th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America, where we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling, and that hopefully explains why we are here on a Saturday night instead of our usual Sunday night time slot, is because today was a doubleheader of big shows, as we had at noon Eastern from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, the WWE Elimination Chamber show that had some big news coming out of that that we'll talk about later on here tonight. And we just finished up the Impact No Surrender special event. I was under the mistaken belief that this was a pay-per-view, of which they only do a few per year. But in fact, this was one of their specials that they do on Impact Plus and Fight TV. I went to purchase it on Fight TV and saw that it was only $9.99. I'm like, wait a minute, that's a lot cheaper than it usually is. And so, you know, I guess credit Impact for building it up on television as if it is important enough to be a pay-per-view, when in fact it was just a special live event, I guess, on that show. So we'll talk about that. First up, if you want to call up and talk about either show, by the way, you can. 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to jump in the queue and speak on either of those topics. If it is too late for you to stay up too long, and you're afraid we won't get to you on the phone lines, there's a remedy for that. You can email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com. You don't even have to have a question. If you just want to give your thoughts on either the Chamber pay-per-view or the No Surrender show, you may do that. So really looking forward to interacting with some folks here tonight. And the interaction actually starts now, because right now jumping on with me to talk about the Impact No Surrender event is PWTorch.com specialist Darren Lilly, who covers Impact for the Torch. Darren, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. Thanks for staying up late with me tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to join you.
Yeah. So, you know, this I thought No Surrender was a really strong show. I know I was not a fan. And I think I had you on the last time there was an actual pay-per-view, Darren, and I think you liked that show a little bit more than I did. But I thought tonight was a really strong show. We'll start with the opening match, which was an X Division number one contenders match that saw Jake Something defeat Speedball Mike Bailey, Chris Bay, and Ace Austin. I was tweeting throughout the show, as I do on major shows, and you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I thought this was, even for the high standard that X Division matches and especially X Division openers have set the bar for Impact special events, I still thought this was a really strong match, even compared to that high bar that they have to meet. So, you know, just your take on the match, as well as Speedball Mike Bailey. He's a recent addition to Impact. I know there had been interest by some of the major companies in him at various times during his career. He ends up landing in Impact Wrestling. From what you've seen of him, and I haven't seen much, to be honest with you, outside of what he's done in Impact so far, but I do recognize the name, and I have followed his career to a certain extent over the last several years. I'm interested to get your opinion on what you think he can bring to the X Division.
I had heard his name before, and I remember that he had the visa issue or whatever. He wasn't allowed in the country, but I really hadn't seen his work until this latest Impact stint. So he's, you know, virtually new to me, and I've been super impressed with what he can do, what I've seen so far. I mean, he really shined in this match, as did everybody. It was just a good mixture of guys. But, yeah, I'm really high on Bailey so far from what I've seen, and like to see him. It looks like they're going to give him some spotlight time with this Ace Austin feud to see where that goes. So I'm glad that they're giving him some TV time, and looking forward to see what he can do.
Jake Something versus Trey Miguel, this sets up, what are your expectations for that match? And do you think, Something has a shot at taking the X Division title from Trey Miguel?
Yeah, I've really been behind Jake for some time. And, ever since they split him up from the Deaners tag team with, Cody Deaner, he's been good, but they haven't really, you know, put the spotlight on him too much. I think this is the perfect opportunity for that. I'm not sure if he's taken that belt from Trey, but they should have a – hopefully it's a series of matches. If they did put that belt on him, I think he would add a little extra something to the X division, and I think he would rise to the occasion if they gave him that spotlight. So I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, I like Trey Miguel as champion, but I wouldn't mind seeing Jake take it.
The second match on the show was Jonah defeating Black Taurus. This felt like Jonah continuing to work his way up the card in Impact Wrestling. What is your take on what his ceiling is in Impact? Is he a guy who you can see as Impact World Champion maybe later this year, maybe early in 2023? Or do you see him as more someone who really fills out the mid-card and gives that part of Impact's roster some added depth?
I've liked what I've seen from him here in the stint from Impact. It strikes me as somebody that they're just going to push to the upper mid-card, perhaps, and maybe I could be wrong about that, but they have kept him strong since his loss to Josh Alexander. But I could see them doing with something. They have him on a winning streak since then, and he's done well in the matches, so I wouldn't be completely surprised if they push him a little bit further. I wonder what his status is. Is he here for like a long-term contract, or is it one of those few months deals where they're kind of in and out? So I'm just curious about that. That's probably the main factor in it.
You mentioned Josh Alexander. He was not on this show. What do you read into that, if anything, in terms of his status within Impact Wrestling? Or is it just, you know, continuing the storyline that they had set out on television where Scott D'Amore, you know, basically kicked him off Team Impact?
Well, from all accounts, it seems to be something that's real. And if I were him, and apparently just from the angle a couple of weeks ago where Brandi Rhodes said his name on AEW, so obviously they know he's on their radar and they're interested. I would just be worried about getting lost in the shuffle there. But obviously, you know, I don't know what kind of money offer. So, I mean, it could just come down to that. But if he's an Impact and the money is something similar, you know he would have a protected spot and he would get the spotlight in Impact. So I could see Impact being a very attractive option for him if they get all of it sorted out. And I don't see why they wouldn't, just based on what I've heard. So I would hope to see him back in Impact soon.
The third match was Jay White defeating Eric Young of Violet by Design. Jay White has also appeared recently on AEW Rampage, so he's pulling triple duty with New Japan, AEW, and Impact. So wild times this 2022 year is. I thought it was odd to see Jay White playing a babyface here. And I even tweeted that out, and I guess I kind of jumped the gun a little bit as to what happens later on in the show, which we'll get to. This is White's kind of second stint in Impact. He came out at the end of a pay-per-view last year, and then nothing really materialized out of that appearance. I think he may have appeared on another Impact or two, and that was really about it. That was when Kenny Omega was in Impact as well. So, you know, how much of an advantage is this for Impact to have somebody the level of Jay White from New Japan, not only being on their show, but wrestling on their show? He's a very heavily pushed talent in New Japan. Is that going to draw new viewers to Impact, do you think, or does Jay White not really have that cachet yet amongst fans who may otherwise check out, say, a Kenny Omega who crosses over into Impact?
Right. Anytime you can get a performer of that caliber on your show, it's an advantage. And I think certainly people who were, you know, always kind of brush off Impact will say, well, maybe I'll give it a chance now if Jay White's on there. I think he's that much of an attraction. And going back to your other point about why would they have him as a babyface, I think that they know that the Impact fan base is excited to see him. So they would just be fighting the tide if they just had him come in as a heel. Although, as we will allude to later, I guess we're building in that direction of turning them. But, yeah, when you it probably didn't even make any sense to bring him in as a heel, so I kind of get that. But as far as this match, I was surprised at how much they gave Eric Young. But, I mean, obviously in Impact, he's pushed as a leader of a faction and kind of a protected guy. But it was a good back-and-forth match. Jay White won, obviously, but... yeah, it was a good match.
I think there's always that question when you bring in someone from another company, you know, what do you do with them? You know, because you have so many masters to serve. You know, you want to keep your relationship with New Japan good, so you're not going to treat Jay White like a second-class citizen in Impact. And yet, you know you only have him for a short time, so you don't want to make your talent that are going to be around 52 weeks a year seem like they are a level below this guy. So I think it's a real balancing act, and having him beat somebody like Eric Young, who is a legacy star with an Impact, he's not going to be hurt by this loss. His promo ability and his intensity will allow him to recover quickly from it. And, you know, with all that said, Eric Young is a mid-carder. You know, it's not like Jay White is going out there and beating Moose in a non-title match or something like that, you know? So, it is interesting with the open door policy, with the forbidden door, whatever you want to call it, that we have in this era. It's interesting to see how every company that gets a wrestler from somewhere else treats them, who they put them over, how often they use them. And it's going to be one of those things that we look back on and we may compare notes with what companies have done with these kinds of wrestlers.
Right, and it is an absolute delicate balance, but the kings of that are Impact Wrestling, because they have people come in for these, like, 3 and 4 month runs, kind of like Omega last year, and Finn Juice comes in and out, and you have to do that delicate dance about, you know, we'd have to push them, but also we don't want to put them over all of our guys. So the Impact creative team is pretty smart about it, so they haven't done anything crazy as far as, like, pushing somebody into the bed. It's not going to be there.
They are becoming experts in the field for sure, and there's value in that. You know, there is value in that.
Exactly.
You're going to want to make other companies look to you and say, hey, you know, we want to work with this company. They've shown that they know how to handle that delicate balance, and it's going to make companies want to come back and continue to work with you. And that's for a company like Impact that is always looking for buzz, that is always trying to break through the wrestling noise that is out there with AEW and WWE, there's value in that for them. So – I look for them to continue to do that in 2022. The fourth match was Deonna Purrazzo and her open challenge, answered by Miranda Alizé. And she, Purrazzo, got the victory. She was allowing the challenger to challenge for either the Reinas de Reina championship from AAA or the ROH title, both of which are held by Purrazzo. Alizé decided to challenge for the ROH title. She has a history in ROH, as Tom Phillips mentioned on the broadcast. She went to the ROH Women's Championship Finals against Roxy, and Purrazzo got the victory here over Alizé. Good match. Were expectations, maybe you can only speak to your own, Darren, but expectations for the open challenge? You know, there are a lot of women free agents on the market thanks to WWE's massive number of roster cuts they made last year, and to have someone like Alizé, who is talented but she doesn't have the same name value that a lot of the other women out there have, was this kind of below expectations for what you had going in? Did she end up being a decent payoff, even though it wasn't a big name or a former WWE talent who answered the call?
For me, I thought it was, and this is just for me, I thought it was perfect because Miranda Alizé had been in that ROH women's tournament, and I was used to seeing her. So for the storyline purposes, it fits perfectly. It exposed her to a new audience who some people may have never even heard of her, but some might have heard the buzz from the she made it all the way to the finals, if I recall correctly. So this is a good chance to showcase her. So I liked it. I thought it was a good choice. She did well in the match. I like these open challenges because it kind of reminds me of Cody Rhodes and that run he had with the TNT title where he did the open challenge, where you kind of bring in new people, and you could also use it kind of like a scouting opportunity for Impact, where they can see, well does this person fit in, you know, give somebody a chance, and it also freshens up the show also by just bringing in somebody new that you might not necessarily sign, but you give them a fresh appearance, and Deanna is now constantly just beating the same people over and over again. So yeah, I thought this was a good choice. I liked it.
Match number five was Matt Cardona defeating Jordan Grace via disqualification to retain the Digital Media Championship. This was, I believe, the pre-show match for the previous pay-per-view, and Cardona and Grace going at it here. If you like intergender, this was a good match. I'm still – I don't know, Darren. The intergender stuff is hard for me, and – I'm not someone who's going to completely close my mind to it, because I don't think – for me, it's not black and white. For me, it's it's not no intergender or, you know, give me all the intergender. I think there are – and Jordan Grace is a good example. I think she fits the mold of someone who is believable and, you know, who doesn't make me uncomfortable when I'm watching intergender wrestling. I mean, she handles herself in a way that, you know, if I was to throw Alexa Bliss in there against Matt Cardona, I don't think it would be the same. And so, you know, I think, like I said, there are shades of gray. It's not just black and white. It's not, I'm not closing my mind to it completely, but it has to be the right mix of talent for me to buy into it. However you want to define that. So curious as to your thoughts on intergender wrestling as a whole, and if you want to, you know, talk specifically about this match as well, feel free.
Well, every time I comment on one of these matches, I always preface it by saying the intergender matches are not my cup of tea. It's just not my thing. But this one, it was well worked. It was believable. They made it, you know, it didn't look outlandish. As you, great example, like saying that Alexa Bliss was in there. I agreed. It would look ridiculous, but I mean, I thought it was like an evenly fought match, and I kind of bought it. So, but I had to echo your comments. Exactly. Yeah. I thought it was fine. And they're putting enough emphasis on that digital media title just by the fact that it was in the pre-show on the previous show, and now it's moved up to like the, I think this is like the fifth match, if I'm not mistaken, and it's getting kind of prominent, and it's making Cardona, you know, playing up his jerk persona, so that's pretty cool. That's been a big hit with the fans and like GCW and stuff, so I'm glad to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go with Grace, with Jordan Grace from here, but she's got a lot to offer. So maybe it looks like the feud might continue because they did a DQ. So we'll see how that goes.
I wanted to ask you about that Cardona persona because, like you said, at GCW, he's really done well as the heel, the you know, kind of invading WWE ish kind of wrestler, and GCW is all about the opposite of that, and I feel like an Impact is kind of like that version of Matt Cardona cut in half, where he's kind of like half playing up that same Matt Cardona. So, you know, to me, I would love to see, and maybe there are certain things that he can get away with in GCW that he just can't in Impact for a variety of reasons, but I would love to see a little bit more of that GCW Matt Cardona in Impact Wrestling.
Right, and but it seems like he's leaning more towards it, though. I mean, he was doing the flipping off of the fans and getting in their face and stuff, so maybe he's bringing more of that GCW stuff here, so wouldn't
that
surprise
me.
Maybe not like all the cursing and all that, but...
Yeah, that's why I said it might be a little limited as to how much of that he can truly bring over, but
sure.
Yeah, we'll see. Match number six was Anderson and Gallows defeating the Gorillas of Destiny in a tag title match. Jay White and Chris Bay turning on the Gorillas of Destiny and siding with Anderson and Gallows by the end of the match. That is what allowed Anderson and Gallows to get the victory. And this is the point in the show, Darren, where I really thought, you know what, this is going to be a really good show. Because if I enjoy an Anderson and Gallows match to the level that I did tonight, then that means this show is – that puts it over the top for me. I am not a huge fan of Anderson and Gallows. In terms of their in-ring work, it's very – to me, very dry and very slow a lot of the time. But I thought their match here with the Gorillas of Destiny, I thought it was fantastic. I really liked it. And not just because of, you know, sometimes you get good matches with wrestlers who have a slower pace because their opponents are creating movement for them. But I didn't think that was the case here. I thought Anderson Gallows held up their end of the bargain as well. So your thoughts on this match and the execution of the turn of Jay White and Chris Bay?
I definitely had similar thoughts. I thought this was like the Good Brothers, one of their best matches in Impact in a long time, which is faint praise, I know, but
oh, yeah.
the bar is low. And even still, we did, because that chin lock from Doc Gallows in there, we got to get that in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was pretty fast-paced, and they worked well together, and I think the Gorillas of Destiny kind of pushed Good Brothers to – you know, get out there and get their working shoes on, as they say. And it was a good match, really entertaining. The turn, yeah, that took me by surprise. I haven't been following New Japan very closely ever since the pandemic, but I don't think they had hinted towards this, if I'm not mistaken. So this will have some ramifications for New Japan, I'm sure. But, yeah, people will be talking about that.
And that's, you know, that's very rare to happen when you do have these forbidden door situations.
Mm-hmm.
When you have somebody coming over and sort of visiting another company, sometimes what they're doing there is not canon of the other company. So
yes.
To see something tonight that you would imagine would have a ripple effect into New Japan and that Impact would really probably need to get permission from New Japan to do you know, really makes you wonder what the fallout is going to be on the New Japan side for this. That's going to be something interesting to watch. Match number seven, Mickie James defeating Tasha Steelz to retain the Knockouts Championship. Steelz is someone who I've looked forward to get this opportunity for a while. I've been a fan of hers for a while, going back to her tag team with Kira Hogan in Impact Wrestling. And it was good to see her get this opportunity, wrestle somewhat of an old school match here with Mickie James. And I thought it was really a lot of fun. And, you know, there's talk that her contract and Impact could be up soon. You know, I think she's gotten to a place where AEW, WWE, some of the bigger companies may come calling for her services. If you had to pick where Tasha Steelz will be 1 year from now, will she still be an Impact? Do you think she'll re-sign, or do you think she ends up trying out AEW, or, you know, maybe WWE would be interested and she ends up there?
Wow. If a contract is coming up, she'll have some options. Ideally, for me, if I had to pick, I would send her to AEW to team up with Kiera Hogan again and reform their tag team. And because maybe if AEW adds women's tag team belts, that would make them prime contenders for it. Not that I've heard anything in that direction whatsoever, but if they ever did, that would be a prime candidate for belts. So I would like to see that and see them do something with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but yeah,
sure. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, but as far as the match itself, it was good. It was pretty basic. It led me to believe that Tasha was like a one and done kind of, and it looked like Mickey's moving to Chelsea Green. So that was a little disappointing after she, you know, finally got her big title shot, and then this was pretty much it. But I mean, it was a fun match. But yeah, we'll see where Tasha's headed.
The eighth match was Moose versus W. Morrissey, and Moose getting the victory over Morrissey to retain the Impact Championship. I thought there was a chance Morrissey could win it here. It felt like he had been built up now over a long period of time. He has lost some of the bigger matches he's been in terms of chasing the title. I thought if you were going to put the title on Morrissey, this was the time to do it. I thought this match followed the blueprint of the Goldberg matches we've seen in WWE, the Brock Lesnar matches that we've seen in WWE, where you just kind of spam the finishers, you know, over and over again, and you hit big moves, and then you rest, and you hit a big move, and then you rest, and you know, and that's not necessarily a complaint, because it's not like I want to see Moose and Morrissey out there chain wrestling or anything like that. So that, you know, that probably is the best for this type of match. But you know, as far as Moose retaining and Morrissey and his chances of winning the title, I mean, did you feel like there was a chance Morrissey was going to win it here? And if not here, do you see him getting it anytime soon, or was this kind of the opportunity that Impact had to put the title on him, and now it's just kind of passed?
I was actually surprised that Morrissey lost. Yeah, I was surprised. Yeah. I thought this was going to be his big crowning as champion, but looks like he kind of like Tasha. He's looking like a one and done. So I'm not sure where he goes from here. So, yeah, he had done well on the build-up to the title match, but looks like this is it for him. If I could wait, make one note in the prior match, I was pretty sure that the group, what was it, Chapel Heart, are you familiar with them at all? I'm not. Okay.
I'm a country music fan, and I've not heard of them. So they must be like either up and coming or just based locally, maybe in around New Orleans.
I see. Yeah, well, they promoted them like so much throughout the show. I was like, they got to be turning on Mickey. So that was another thing I was surprised at, that they did not make a heel turn. It looked like something was coming.
Did you by chance hear their rendition of the national anthem at the beginning of the show?
I heard some of it. I wasn't really paying that close attention.
Okay.
Was it bad or?
I don't. Well, I thought it was, but I'll admit that I was. So I had the TV on. I was actually eating dinner in the other room. So I kind of had like one eye and one ear on the TV and one eye on my dinner as I'm trying to eat it and, you know, trying to listen to the conversation around the dinner table. And like, I kept looking over there. Even my girlfriend made mention, like, you could see it in her face, like when she was hearing it, like you could tell that she wasn't really digging the sound. And I just wanted to check with someone who had heard it to make sure like it wasn't just me mishearing it, or you know, it's in the other room, so I wasn't. But it did not sound good. And I don't mean to be rude or anything like that. Like I don't have anything against them. I'm a country music fan, so it's not like I don't like the genre or anything like that, or I'm out to, you know, ruin their careers. But it didn't sound good.
Oh, okay.
So I just wasn't sure. I just wasn't sure if you had heard it or not.
Yeah, I just bit not enough to make a judgment on it, but.
Okay, so you're going to let me hang out here just all by my lonesome being critical, huh? Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. 100%.
All right, I guess I don't blame you on that. Moving on, that's my musical critique of the evening. The main
excellent
event was Honor No More defeating Team Impact. Earlier in the show, Eddie Edwards was, we did not see this. We saw him writhing in pain on the floor backstage, and he was taken out of the match. Willie Mack was inserted into his place. Eddie Edwards came out toward the end of the match and turned on Team Impact to help Honor No More get the victory. This is not a surprise to a lot of people, Darren, because this is the scenario that a lot of people on Twitter have been talking about potentially playing out here on this show. I wonder, because you know, they made specific mention of the doctor not clearing Eddie Edwards, and I'm thinking, okay, is the doctor in on it now with Eddie Edwards, or is he just incompetent? I wonder if that will play itself out, or if that's something we're just supposed to not think about. But, you know, this match, I thought, it's the old grudge match that starts out with a collar and elbow tie-up. You know, people are critical of those kinds of matches. And I felt similar in this one. I felt that this should just been a big brawl. And they were in the ring doing, you know, technical stuff. And I thought it didn't really fit the build-up to this match and the blood-like feud that had developed between this group from Ring of Honor and Team Impact. So I thought that was kind of off. Otherwise, it was a good match. Eddie Edwards' turn is certainly interesting. Now that Team ROH is kind of as officially in Impact as I guess you can be, what do you see for this group? Is it going to kind of splinter and they go their own ways and kind of become members of the Impact roster and feud with other members of the Impact roster? Or do you see them sticking together and continuing to wreak havoc in Impact?
That's the big question I had. Like, where do you go now? Because they've taken over or whatever. I guess they will stick together. Now we have to see how this Eddie thing plays out. I guess it was just time for him to do that because it freshens up his character and gives him something to do. He was kind of stagnant as just being the kind of rah-rah Impact guy. So it gives him a new little twist, a little course. So that's good. But I guess a lot depends on what they do with Eddie. Is he going to be the leader of them? Is he going to splinter off? So some good questions for upcoming episodes of Impact, I guess. But I'm guessing that they're going to stick together. Maybe down the line,
you can add in some new people. Yeah, it's tough because it's like, okay, what was the purpose of this group in the first place? It was to sort of wreak havoc and gain access to Impact Wrestling. Okay, now they have it. Now they're allowed in there. So, like, what is the – if they stay together as the group, what is the continued purpose of it? So I think that's kind of a question that needs to be answered. If they do continue on. So, it's if nothing else, it's going to add a lot more depth to Impact's roster, at least in the short term. We don't know how long these guys are around. ROH is coming back April 1st with, you know, it's not going to be the same ROH. It's going to be the shorter term contracts and things of the like. But, you know, we don't know if this is a short term thing to get to that ROH pay-per-view. And, you know, maybe this ROH Impact feud continues and you have ROH versus Impact on the first new ROH pay-per-view. So that's a possibility too. A lot of possibilities with this ROH group in Impact. So, Darren, I'll let you go there. Thank you so much for joining me and running down this No Surrender card. I'll give you an opportunity here before I let you go to plug your work for the Torch. And you're on Twitter now. So go ahead and plug your social media as well.
I caved. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Darren_Lilly. And you can read my weekly Impact recap and the premium special. I don't know what Impact calls theirs, their Impact Plus specials on the Torch as well. And I have a Wrestling Merchandise 101 column that comes out every Monday or Tuesday. So check that out as well. And thank you for having me tonight. Thank you.
Awesome. Absolutely, Darren. We look forward to having you on again soon on a regular episode. So Darren Lilly, PWTorch.com contributor here helping me run down the No Surrender card. If you're tuning in late, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. We're talking No Surrender, Impact. I almost said pay-per-view, but it is not. I guess it's a special event that just went off the air, as well as the Elimination Chamber show from earlier today. If you want to call in, 515-605-9345. We've got two callers on hold right now. It's like DJ from Miami and Craig from Toledo. We'll be talking to them here momentarily. You can also email us wnialivecast@gmail.com. But before we get to the phones, I do want to run down the Elimination Chamber show here in case we get some questions about that. The pre-show was Rey Mysterio defeating The Miz. That was scheduled to be on the show, moved off to the pre-show. Miz was then teasing that he was going to call someone up who could help him deal with Ray and Dominic. And, of course, the rumor mill gets started. People are wondering, is it Cody Rhodes? Now, if you're Cody Rhodes leaving an EVP position in AEW, a main position in AEW on screen as a talent, you're probably not going to WWE to help The Miz against the Mysterios. So that's probably a red herring, but you can never rule anything out. The opening match was Roman Reigns defeating Goldberg to retain the Universal Championship. It was a choke. Goldberg did not tap. He was deemed knocked out, I suppose, so the referee stopped the match. So Goldberg had said he had one match left on his WWE contract. This would presumably be it, although with it being WrestleMania season, you do wonder if WWE will want to bring him back for that event. They could have very easily, this being his last match of his contract, if they had no interest in using him again, they could have very easily had him tap out to Roman Reigns. We know that Reigns is going to be in the main event of one of the nights of WrestleMania, so you're going to want to put him over as strong as you can between now and then, and nothing would be putting him over more strongly than forcing Goldberg to tap out, but they didn't do that here. So that makes me think that if Goldberg is willing and his body is able, that he will come to terms with WWE for another short-term agreement at the very least. Match was, you know, short, which was fine and probably as it should have been, with Reigns dominating most of it. This was a good show, I thought, by the way. The results were all very predictable, but that's not always a bad thing. So this is an example of a show with predictable results that was still pretty good, I would say, up and down the card. And it really kicked into gear with match number two, which was Bianca Belair winning the Women's Elimination Chamber number one contender match, defeating Doudrop, Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Nikki A.S.H., and Rhea Ripley. She becomes the number one contender to the Raw Women's Championship and will face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. So this continues their feud, which was started at SummerSlam this past year when Becky Lynch returned and defeated Belair for the title. So that was this was a match where the intervals were very short. Usually it's, I think, 5-minute intervals or somewhere thereabouts. This was about 2 minutes in between the entrances. And what I really liked about this was they continued to do a good job putting over the likes of Doudrop and Morgan and Ripley. And, you know, WWE is really starting to build some decent women's division depth on the Raw roster. And it continued here. They did a nice job spotlighting some of those women. And now you have Alexa Bliss returning to the fold. So she's sort of in between her old gimmick and her most recent one as part of the spell that Bray Wyatt had cast over her. She's broken out somewhat of that mold, but still has some remnants of it left after the weeks of skits of therapy. Match number three was Ronda Rousey and Naomi defeating Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville. Again, no surprise here. Rousey taps out Deville despite Rousey, as per the stipulation this past week on SmackDown Wrestling, with one arm tied behind her back. Naomi, I enjoy Naomi. And so I thought that for someone who I believe has often been overlooked for women's championship opportunities and for big pushes on the women's side of things, for her to be involved at this level with names like Rousey and Flair on a major show like this, I think was important. And you know, sort of like the Raw side, I think it helps build the SmackDown division depth. You got Sonya Deville, who likely sooner rather than later will return to a full-time wrestling role rather than kind of half executive, half wrestler. And you also have Naomi, who's been feuding with her. The feud has not been good, let's be honest, but it has put Naomi in a position to where she's in some key angles and key storylines on weekly television. So there is value in that, even if the storyline itself has not been great. So this continues to build Rousey versus Flair, which will also take place at WrestleMania. Next stop, by the way, is WrestleMania. This was the last pay-per-view between now and then. So premium live event. I'm sorry. I'll get my swear jar here right next to my computer, and I'll put a quarter in every time I say pay-per-view from here on out. Match number four was Drew McIntyre over Madcap Moss in a Falls Count Anywhere match. They didn't really use the Falls Count Anywhere stip as much as they possibly could have. the big moment in this match and really coming out of this pay-per-view was one of the overhead throws by McIntyre and Moss landing on his head, which was tough to watch and I'm sure tough to go through for Moss, but he was able to continue the match and did a nice job. But yeah, McIntyre, while holding Angela, his sword, giving the Claymore to Moss and pinning him. McIntyre, you would imagine, would be slated for a big match at WrestleMania. You would hope that this is kind of the end of the line for his feud with Corbin and Moss. It's already gone on probably a month too long or 2 months too long. So hopefully they are able to turn the page on that. And McIntyre, perhaps as early as this Friday, will have something, maybe something with Sami Zayn, the new Intercontinental Champion, who defeated Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown on Friday night. Match number five, Becky Lynch defeating Lita for the Raw Women's Championship. And they went, you know, this is not a short match. They tested Lita here and her conditioning. Lita, it was tough to see. She hasn't had a singles match of this level in a long time, 46 years old. It was tough to see what was ring rust and what was just kind of Lita, because even in her prime, she had a very different style in terms of, you know, she was athletic, but she was awkward. Her timing wasn't always there. And so, you know, you don't know what to attribute to just Lita being Lita, and that's her style versus what was ring rust. But they did well enough. There was no major botches or anything like that. Becky Lynch gets a victory over a legacy star, almost, you know, similar to Roman Reigns here. Reigns defeats Goldberg on his road to WrestleMania, and, you know, that's another feather in his cap. Similarly, Becky Lynch defeats Lita here, a big name from the past. No one on the current roster has to be sacrificed in this position. And, you know, Lynch still gains something because she beats a big name in a Hall of Famer. And then the main event, Brock Lesnar defeating winning the chamber match, winning the WWE Championship, defeating Lashley, AJ Styles, Riddle, Austin Theory, and Seth Rollins. So Lashley was taken out very early when they collapsed his pod and, you know, amid fighting, and he was taken out for quote-unquote concussion protocol. So he didn't actually do any physicality in this match, and so it was kind of, people saw that as a booking out to get the title off of him without having him lose. It has since come out this evening that Lashley has a shoulder injury that he suffered at the Royal Rumble during his match with Lesnar, and he's going to miss some extended time getting that taken care of, possibly even WrestleMania. So that would explain the booking of this match where he doesn't lose, but he loses the title. And now when he comes back, he's got a complaint. But Brock Lesnar winning the chamber and doing so in impressive fashion, eliminating most of everyone in the match, including giving Austin Theory an F5 off the top of the pod, which was an impressive visual, even if the camera work was not the best for that. So Lesnar going into his match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania in a position of strength as WWE champion, dominating the chamber match. I thought it was pretty entertaining the way he did. Look, Lesnar is at his best when he is booked as just an assassin who goes through and just whoops everybody in the match and does so in a fashion unlike anyone else. And that's what happened here. And you want to do that when you're facing a guy like Roman Reigns, who's held the Universal Championship for 500 some odd days. And really you need the fans to believe someone has a chance of beating him. So if you book Lesnar like that in the go home program for him leading up to Roman Reigns, I don't have a problem with that. It is champion versus champion. And I believe the early advertising that WWE has out for that is winner take all. So both titles will be on the line here. They don't say anything about merging the titles, at least not yet. That still is up for grabs. That's still potentially out there to be made, but that's not the early advertising from WWE for that WrestleMania match. So I thought you know, Chamber match and Chamber show was good. Chamber matches were short, both around 15 minutes in length, which is very unusual for Elimination Chamber matches. And even then, they had to scrap the Usos Viking Raiders because they were in a three-hour window to get this done. So, yeah, kind of odd. They had the Usos and Viking Raiders brawl outside before the match and never did get it started. Cody Rhodes, by the way, not appearing either in video package form or in person for this show, which and some thought that there was potential for that to happen because his contract was up. There's no compete or anything like that to our knowledge. So he could start as soon as possible with WWE. And we'll have to wait to see when that date occurs. Certainly would expect him to be around for WrestleMania. Okay, so 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you want to get in line to talk about Impact Wrestling's No Surrender pay-per-view. Well, again, not pay-per-view, but same type of thing. And the WWE Premium Live Event Elimination Chamber. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. First up tonight is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind?
I got a couple of things. My first thing is about the belts. How can I explain this to you? Okay, so if Bobby Lashley wasn't hurt, do you think, like, they would have took the belt off of him because he is a fighting champion? Or, I mean, I feel like now that Brock's going to go in and lose, and then so Roman's going to get the double champ, so does that mean, like, all of a sudden we're going to do the same thing as last year and have McIntyre get one belt off of Reigns? Like, I don't know. I'm just confused, you know? Or I hope they don't merge him then. Them what?
Yeah, I'm with you, DJ, on the merging. I hope they don't merge the titles. I think, you know, and naturally when you have a talent like Roman Reigns who is in such a groove, there is probably temptation from WWE to say, hey, he's done such a good job as the lead on SmackDown. Why don't we utilize him on Raw too? You know, I get that temptation, but I hope the belts are not merged. Obviously, someone's going to walk out of that with two titles, but you hope that they're not merged. I'm in favor of the brand split, so you know that would bring into conversation, you know, potentially ending the brand split or at least doing it for the champion who's going to end up appearing on both shows. But you know, to your original question about Lashley is, you know, if he was not hurt, would he have still lost the title? I think so. I don't know how he would have lost the title in the chamber in terms of, you know, when his elimination would have occurred. Would they have protected him or anything like that? But I think the plan was probably having Lesnar win here and go into WrestleMania champion versus champion, even if Lashley had been healthy.
Don't know. I'm just scared they're going to merge the belt. I don't know why, but this is Vince here, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yep.
My second thing is, okay, if Austin Fury got with Brock Lesnar twice, I feel like maybe they're going to do something with him because, you know, it wasn't like he went through everybody and then he picked Riddle. No, it was Austin Fury again at the end. So I feel like maybe he's next in line. I don't know. What do you really think of him? I mean, you know, I know he lost to AJ, but what do you think? Do you think they're going to move him up the ladder?
Well, obviously WWE sees something in him by having him interact in backstage segments with Vince McMahon. They don't waste McMahon appearances on people who don't matter. And so you have to imagine that WWE does have an eye out for Austin Theory, that they do see a lot of potential in him as a main event star. And, you know, they're starting small. They're having him interact with Vince. They're not pushing him into a title situation right off the bat. But, you know, certainly working with Lesnar here, you know, I think it was just as much, hey, he's the guy who's going to take the F5 off the top of the pod to end the match. I think that may have been enough of a reason to have him be eliminated last as opposed to, hey, this Austin Theory guy is someone we see as a future star. let's book him being eliminated last so that he can get some rub from being in there against Brock Lesnar and holding his own until the last elimination. So I think in this particular instance, I do agree that he does have a bright future in WWE, see something in him, but I'm not sure that was why he ended up last. I think it was more he's the guy who's going to take the F5 off the pod, and we want to save that for the last elimination.
I just hope he doesn't end like one of the comedy guys. You know, I feel like he's a good wrestler, and I feel like, you know, he, you know, has the facials and everything. And, you know, if so, I feel like he can really move up the ladder and being some comedy thing. So, you know, my last thing is EAW real fast. Do you think it's really worth this dog match? Like, do you think it's like, oh, we're doing this Piper thing, or do you think it's just too soon because they already did one? Do you think they should have did some other kind of match? Like, you know, they already did something like this already. Like, wouldn't you think they would do something special with these guys? And with Punk and him, I mean, this is like something that we haven't seen in a long time, you know, rivalry against totally babyface.
Well, the last dog collar match was well over a year ago. It's not like they're going back to it too soon, I don't think. And AEW has done enough stipulation matches where already there's just not a ton of, you know, even if you take into the old school stipulations into account, there doesn't seem to be a lot left on the table for AEW to choose from. But I do think, you know, the dog collar match works in the context of the story they're telling, which is, you know, MJF, you know, keeps talking about being bigger than Piper in Portland, and what was Piper's signature match? It was the dog collar match with Greg Valentine, which Punk mentioned in his promo on an AEW. So it fits that style, and I think it also is, you know, I think it's going to be a really good match. I think it's going to be violent in the way that it needs to be given the buildup of Punk versus MJF. So I don't have a problem with it.
Okay. And then you don't think that Wardlow's going to turn or anything? You think this is going to be a straight match, right? You don't think nothing, you know, swerving?
I'm trying to imagine a scenario. It's hard in a dog collar match, I think. You know, there are a million different iterations you could go, but just looking at the very basics of a dog collar match, I do feel like it would be difficult for Wardlow to turn here. But on the other hand, you've been teasing this turn for so long, you do eventually have to pay it off. And what better way to pay it off than on the biggest stage, which is pay-per-view. So right now, I don't really see an avenue to where Wardlow could turn on MJF in this match, but there's still a few weeks to build up to it, and something could reveal itself to me that I hadn't thought about. So at this point, I'm saying I don't think it's going to happen there at Revolution, but, you know, ask me. Well, we'll talk about it again on the preview show here on Wrestling Night in America and see if we can come up with any good ideas for it.
I just hope that was a straight match because, you know, the Piper thing. So I just hope that, you know, they'll do it the next night. Yeah. You know what I mean? So we'll see. All right.
Yep.
So I'll see you next
Absolutely.
Week.
All right. Thanks, DJ, for being the first caller here tonight. Don't forget, 515-605-9345 is the number. We'll stay on as long as we get callers. And right now we're down to our last one. So this is Craig from Toledo. Craig, good to talk to you here again on Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I was just thinking about you all week, Greg, because
– Well, hello? I know I'm always on your mind, Craig, so I appreciate that.
I was like, Greg's doing a Saturday night at 11 o'clock at night pod this week, and all these events have happened all this week, and he has to cover Jeddah and Impact on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock. Like, oh, man, I feel bad for you, dude.
Well, it's okay. I don't mind it. It's I could have gone Sunday night. I wish these, you know, this was a weekend that I really could have done Sunday night because I've got no school Monday, so I wouldn't have mind staying up later Sunday to cover one of these. But yeah, so Saturday nights, I think, and that's, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because with WWE moving so many of their premium live events to Saturday nights in 2022. it's going to be a lot of Wrestling Night in America on Saturday nights, I think, this year, more so than usual, covering these events and Impact's on Saturday nights and AEW's on Saturday nights for some pay-per-views, although they're moving some to Sundays. So it's going to be Whiplash.
Right?
Yeah, so you're really going to need to tune into my Twitter feed, at Greg M. Parks, and listen to each and every week where I give you the lowdown on when exactly the show is going to be the next week, because sometimes I don't even know. So, it's I don't mind it. 11 o'clock on a Saturday, there are worse ways to spend a Saturday night, I think.
That's true. I was wondering what you're – because everyone in the entire wrestling world has given their thoughts on the Cody – Switch and the Steve Austin thing, and I was just wanted to give you some space to weigh in yourself.
I did tweet about the Cody thing and what I kind of thought was interesting the day that it happened, and of course, you know, I'm in school while it's happening and I can check Twitter every once in a while, but I'm certainly not gonna be posting during the day, so it's like I have to kind of gather my thoughts and then wait till the last bell rings to really hammer them out on Twitter. But you know, the first thing that struck me about Cody moving to WWE is, you know, certainly what happens with Brandy, and I think Wade Keller answered that in a focus on AEW that he did on the Cody situation, and you know, Wade had as many details, if not more, than anyone else on Cody leaving AEW this week. So if you haven't listened to his focus on AEW this week, I encourage you to do so. So many details about, you know, the reaction to Cody leaving and all that stuff. And, you know, my first thought was Brandy and what happens with her, because she is a very polarizing figure. At least she was in AEW. And, you know, would WWE find a use for her on television or behind the scenes? And it sounds like that she is not part of the deal with Cody moving to WWE. So that answered one of my questions. And my other one was, you know, Cody had tried his hand at EVP in AEW, and in the creative aspect of the company. We know that his father was notorious for his creative stylings in many companies. And we also know that in WWE there is a power vacuum right now behind Vince McMahon, with Triple H seemingly out of the picture in terms of, you know, being an option to take over once Vince McMahon leaves, however he leaves. There doesn't really seem to be a backup plan creatively. We know that Nick Khan is more than able to handle the business side of things, but creatively there's no one there who appears ready to step up into that void that Vince leaves. And one wonders, with the experience Cody has gotten in AEW, with the experience, you know, that he learned from his father, that he inherited from Dusty, is that something that he is going to angle for? Is that something that he has an eye on or has any interest in WWE? Or is he planning on coming in strictly as a talent? So he does have a lot of other irons in the fire. You know, he wants to act in Hollywood, and he wants, you know, he's doing the Go Big show, and he's got his reality show Roads to the Top. So there may not be enough hours left in the day for him to devote to creative, especially with the way the WWE's creative machine works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it's something to keep an eye on as he goes forward. It shakes things up, Cody going to WWE. I'm interested to see just where he fits in WWE. And Wade brought up the point, you know, that when people have left WWE and gone on to bigger and better things, and then they've come back to WWE, Vince's vision for them never really changed. Vince would not look at Christian as a top star in Impact and say, oh, we're getting Christian back. He improved his stock outside of WWE. Let's take advantage of that by pushing him bigger. They didn't do that. Same with John Morrison. You know, he was a big attraction in Lucha Underground. He was a big attraction in Impact. He came back to WWE as Miz's sidekick. And so Cody Rhodes, he was Stardust when he left. He was, you know, he was a bigger star initially when he was in WWE. After he got past the tag team with Hardcore Holly and was with Randy Orton, then he ended up leaving. And so what is Vince's vision for Cody Rhodes now? Is it different than what it was when he was in WWE previously? It almost has to be for Cody to come back to WWE and for WWE to probably pay Cody the kind of money that would require. So all of that is just, I mean, there's just so many angles to this from the WWE side, not even touching on the effect it has on AEW. So that's, you know, we could have a whole show about that. Steve Austin, I know that there was talk early in the week about Steve Austin potentially having a match at WrestleMania. I think Kevin Owens was the name thrown out. Owens would be a safe opponent for Austin. Owens uses the stunner, or has at least in the past used the stunner as a move of his in his repertoire. So that would certainly be a connection to Steve Austin. You know, they're in Texas. Austin was all over the advertising for WrestleMania for the last year. So, but man, I don't know. You know, Austin has always been against it. And I'm curious as to what would have changed for Steve Austin other than maybe WWE pulled up two dump trucks full of money instead of one to his house. Like, I don't know other than that. What really would have changed for Austin to decide, yes, now is the time that I want to come back, and after all these years of saying no. So maybe Austin will do a podcast where he discusses it after the fact. I don't know. But it certainly adds a lot of intrigue to it. It adds more star power to WrestleMania if this indeed happens, which I'm not convinced that it will 100% yet, but it's out there enough to where I thank you, Craig, for bringing it up because it is worth talking about. It's really wild couple days earlier in the week this week. And so sometimes when we get to Saturday or Sunday, it's almost like that's been forgotten and we've moved on to other things. So I am glad you called in and brought that up and allowed me to give my thoughts on those topics.
Yeah, and I didn't even bring up the Rocket Super Bowl. I mean, that happened this week too.
Yes, it did, although I'm not sure it has any effect on WWE. So
yeah, he did cut it, you know, and then he put up that tweet that said something. I don't know if you saw that one. The million. He didn't pause
the
after
tease,
the million.
Right, you said something was a
tease.
Yeah.
I can't stand WWE nostalgia crap. With all this,
I couldn't really figure out what that tweet meant. I'm not sure what that was referring to. Like, I guess, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was a tease for WrestleMania next year.
He wants the pause to last for another year, I think. I don't know. But going back to the Cody thing that you were talking about, somebody I heard earlier this week said, and it made sense to me, and I hadn't heard anybody speak of it like this, they have to treat him good in WWE, because if they don't, if they treat him like crap, they just put him in the makeup and throw him out there as a mid-carder or a lower mid-card guy, then everyone's going to see that, who is a potential free agent to come from AEW back to WWE or, you know, whatever. So it's kind of like a, like this is a litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't think of it that way, in that he kind of has, you know, but also what you said, another one of the things you said, talking about the production part of it and the creative part of it. Was Vince watching an AEW Dynamite episode and he was like, man, Cody is knocking it out of the park right now. We got to get this.
That seems pretty unlikely, right?
Yeah, but it'd be funny if he did. I mean,
just... Oh, for sure. To the point that you made there, This is WWE, and you wonder how much of that played a part, right? How much of it being WWE able to snag not only a major star from AEW, but also an executive vice president. And WWE has suffered loss after loss. A lot of it is their own doing when they've cut guys, but they've seen AEW get all this positive press for taking WWE wrestlers and, for the most part, using them better than WWE had. And I'm sure that got under the skin of people within WWE, maybe even Vince McMahon. So when the opportunity arose for WWE to strike back and finally get a tally in their column to be able to take someone from AEW, and not only that, but for it to be someone who was at the ground floor when the company began, I think that they absolutely wanted to take it and wanted to take advantage of it. And even if they maybe had to overpay or pay more than they wanted to do that, I'm sure that played a part. You know, I go back to WCW and WWE, and when Vince would take guys from WCW and never seemed to really know how to use them. And that never really stopped guys from trying to come to WWE or wanting to come to WWE from WCW. So I'm sure he won't be a mid-carder Stardust again. But I don't know how much the booking of Cody Rhodes, how many people are sitting there in AEW watching the booking of Cody Rhodes in WWE and using that as their own personal litmus test to decide whether or not to go to WWE.
Yeah. And also the money.
Yes, the money. Very, very much.
That's the ultimate factor in it. But I was thinking, you know, just me not having any investment in the Cody or whatever, the only things I really care about in wrestling right now, like the only things that I'm invested in is the G1, if the torture chamber crap gets out of there, Jon Moxley, MJF, and Britt Baker. Like, that's it. Other than that, I mean, I'm pretty much out. Keith Lee's an interesting, you know, wrench. I hope he figures it out. But other than that, I just sit back and watch, and I'm just like, this is fun to just watch people react to what's going on. And a lot of people reacted this week. It was nuts. I'm like getting podcast, emergency podcast download, you know, stuff. It was really funny. And
I'm sure when there's no skin in the game, it is much easier and much more easygoing to just sit back and kind of watch the reactions as opposed to being 100% invested in everything.
Yeah, and it's like watching an episode of Elementary where you're trying to figure out what's going to happen at the end. Like, I think this could be a long con because Cody is now the heel that everybody wanted him to be, because the worst thing you could do to an AEW fan is turn your back on them and go back to WWE. And so when he comes back, and I didn't even know he was 37 years old until I think Wade said it on one of his shows, 37 years old, 2 or 3 years from now, he comes back to AEW as a heel that turned his back on AEW, different contract. He could do something crazy and say, well, that was a different contract. I can go for the title now. He just passed the guy on the shoulder with the title. You know, there's so many options. I think it could be fun. You know, it's fun to fantasy book it in your head, but, you know, those things always, you know, when you put it up in your head too much, it just goes, you know, you're ultimately disappointed. But
Absolutely.
I just think it's interesting just to watch people react to everything happening right now. And I'm glad I was one of the people that got to react tonight. One of the two people.
I am glad as well, Craig. Thank you for allowing me to extend this show a little longer than it otherwise would have been. And again, for allowing me to speak on the Cody to WWE situation and the potential Steve Austin return at WrestleMania. Certainly big news and certainly worth taking a few moments out of Wrestling Night in America to discuss tonight.
Yeah, I look forward to next week. You get to take a deep breath and then preview the next week.
Yes, and of course, you know, there's always the chance that something crazy happens this week that we'll need to cover as well that no one saw coming.
Hey.
So that's always on the table, too.
You got Lashley's shoulder on your mind there.
Yeah, I know. That's unfortunate, especially in WrestleMania season. But we'll see. All right, Craig, thanks for calling. Thank you for taking
my call, dude.
Absolutely. You too. All right, so it looks like that is it for Wrestling Night in America here tonight. Thank you for all participating here tonight. Don't forget, as the crazy week last week, right, with the Austin news and with Cody Rhodes news. So if at any point during the week you feel the need to fire off an email for us to discuss on that next week's show, please do so. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails. And don't forget, next Sunday night, I believe it's going to be Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, our usual day, usual time, although it's been bouncing around lately with us doing post-pay-per-view shows here and taking your reaction on it, which I love doing, by the way. But it looks like we'll be back here, pwtorchdailycast.com, next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter @GregMParks, where I tweet during a lot of the major shows. Love interacting with fans there as well. I have a full-page column in each edition of the Torch newsletter. This most recent one, I took a look at WWE injuries for the year of 2021. I've been chronicling injuries for about 4 or 5 years now in WWE and keeping track of a lot of information related to those injuries, just to see if any patterns develop year to year. And it is interesting to dig into those. Now that we have 4 or 5 years of data to look into, you can actually start to sense and read into patterns more so than you otherwise could. So hope that you'll check that out in each week of the PW Torch newsletter. And again, tune in next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.